Hi, you're listening to the FASD Success Show with Jeff Noble. In today's episode, I'm going to be talking to a professional who has dedicated her career to understanding, advocating, and supporting families and individuals with FASD. So much so, she wrote her thesis on fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which she has just turned into an ebook, A Complicated and Beautiful Brain. Angela Geddes refers to it as a guide to understanding the effects of prenatal alcohol exposure and what FASD looks like across the lifespan. We talk about her book, her journey, how and what she thinks the system needs to do to be more responsive, as well as giving some quick tips for caregivers on accommodations that can be implemented right now. And also, we're going to talk about my free workshop that only happens once a year. That's coming up in the next 2 weeks. So let's get after it.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Yes, y'all. Welcome. Whether this is your first episode or your 83rd episode, thank you so much for being here. I know how much your time means to you, and I know how much precious time is, and it's so valuable to you, especially if you're raising an individual with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, because it's hard and they demand time and attention and supervision and love and support and all that, those good things to make it happen, because if you weren't there, things would not happen. I am uber excited. I'm uber excited you're here today. I am excited that it is now October, depending on when you're listening to this, but it is October when we are doing this. It's spooky Halloween time. It's fall. Fall is absolutely my favorite season of the year. If you live in a place with seasons, what's your favorite season? I just love fall. I love sweater weather. I love wearing sweaters. Freaking love it. And I love going for walks and the colors and the leaves, and things are changing and everything's excellent. Hockey's starting, all good stuff, and other things which I'm going to get to right before we get to the interview. But, you know, I want to get this stuff out of the way real quick. If you're digging what we do, and you know what we do is try to create FASD success, this podcast is all about creating success. Whether you are a caregiver, an individual on the spectrum, you work with individuals on spectrum, you are a family member to an individual on the spectrum, you provide support. If you are in the sphere of influence, our job is to give you insight and understanding so that you can have better days, that you can have great interactions, create great relationships, and it doesn't have to be so hard. Like, that's the goal. If you dig the what we do, by how we do that is we interview people who are really doing great things, who have a great experience and insight and who have been there and are trailblazing and doing new things and unique things. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to the show. It helps both of us. It helps you, because as soon as we drop an episode, you will know where to find it. It'll be in your podcast player, and we send it right to you. And it helps us because it helps the algorithms know that we're a relevant show. And I didn't share this. I did not share this. Shame on me last week. But we hit 100,000 downloads. We have only been around, it'll be 2 years in January. January 1st, I think we put out our first episode 2 years ago. That is incredible. Thank you for listening, for sharing. I didn't think we'd be at this level, and it just goes to show how awesome you guys are. So if you like what we're doing, please subscribe, because it makes us relevant to the algorithms, you know, the computer bots in the background. And so when people go searching on Google or wherever they are for fetal alcohol, boom, we pop up, and we're able to help people. So I really think that's cool. If you want to go a little bit further and you want to help and support us, you can do that by going to buymeacoffee.com/FASD success. It starts as little as like $5. You can buy us a coffee. It helps us. It helps us run the show. It helps us. We were able to get an editor. His name is Kevin. I was having a conversation with him a couple days ago, actually, because, you know, it's good to touch base. And he was telling me, now, I'm not going to go into the details, but overall, he was telling me, because he listens now to all of these podcasts when he's editing, that he had an interaction with someone from his past who was describing what was going on in their lives. And he was like, oh my gosh, this sounds like this could be FASD. And he was able to share that in a way that the person was receptive to that information and given another avenue to perhaps go down, right? To something to consider. So even it's having an effect on the people who are working on the show. So good for you, Kevin, way to advocate. And that is also because you guys are able to, you support us. And so we can have Kevin do that. So just thank you very much. And listen, so I'm so jacked.
Sue, are you all right?
Yes. Oh, God. I just love surprises. I'm so freaking effing excited.
Okay. So excited because not only is it all the things that I mentioned, but it's also like we're approaching workshop week. We're approaching, I do this once a year. That is it. And it's called the Caregiver Kickstart Workshop. It's going to start on the 18th as the first live session that we do. But we are starting registration like today, like now. So I'll give you the quick synopsis and we'll move on. But I've been doing this workshop for a long time now. And we do it once a year and it's free. And the workshop and the training is designed to give you a deeper understanding of FASD so you can get those around you on board. And the way it works is that I need you to invite those people that are in your circle of influence, whether they are your family members, your social worker, your teacher, anybody that you want to get on your team, or anybody that you've been trying to relay that FASD is real and they need to be accommodated and I'm not crazy and I'm not making this up, because I know people make us feel that way. And so the workshop, I call it workshop week, because really what happens is we have a private Facebook group, right? And we do three live sessions. Now that's what's different about this year. Before, I would have pre-recorded videos, but I'm doing them live. I'm doing them live. So like the first one's on October 18th at 1 p.m. because I miss interacting with y'all. I just miss it. I have been going live the last several weeks in our other group, and I just love the feedback since I can't see you in person. I just love it. And what we're doing is I'm going to give you training, but it's designed so that the people that are watching it with you, that are listening or that have registered themselves, get an understanding of, okay, this is for real. They were not making this up. So not only am I giving you a deeper understanding of FASD, I'm going to teach you how to advocate. You know, when you're in those conversations, you don't know what to say, or you wish you knew what to say or how to say it to answer the certain questions that the people are asking so you could convince them and let them know that what you're talking about is true. We're going to go through that too. And then on the third session, I'm going to give you an absolute blueprint, like a roadmap, what to do next. So you're going to leave that workshop and you not only are going to have a deeper understanding, you're going to know how to advocate better, and you're going to have a roadmap on what to do next. The whole while, hopefully somebody is watching that you invited that gets insight that they never had before. And then next thing you know, you're starting to build your team, which is excellent. So we have a private Facebook group, and it's a workshop week because not only am I doing these live training sessions, but I'm also going to be sharing a lot of case studies. People that have taken our full coaching course, which we will open after the week-long workshop, but how they've done it. It's not just all, oh yeah, everything's awesome, everything's great. It's like, what did you do? How did you do it? And we're going to go through those too. And so I'll be playing those in the Facebook group. And then you start to make friends. Like if you feel alone, you immediately, people leave when the workshop's over, they have friends and they're able to know that they're not alone. Know that you're not alone. I do it once a year. That is it. I just want to read you something real quick. Okay. So in our private group for the Caregiver Kickstart Workshop, someone posted this last year, and then they posted what they were saying, and then they took a screenshot of a text message that they got. So this person wrote, I got this text from my mother-in-law. We have had a rough go with her since about a year ago. Lots of judgmental comments. We finally distanced ourselves and told her when she is ready to learn about her grandson's disabilities to let us know. Well, she asked. And then she posted the actual text, and it says, thanks, Laura. I listened to the first video, because remember it was a video before, but now it's going to be live. Thanks, Laura. I listened to the first video and took notes, and I am looking forward to viewing the second video. Learned a lot about all of the disabilities associated with FASD, more than I ever thought. Thank you again for sending this link. I love these boys, and I want to be a good grandparent to them and help them any way I can. You both are doing such an excellent job, not just with twins, but with us. Love you, and thank you so much for inviting me to watch these. Boom! Right? So All you have to do is go to fasdsuccess.com/CKS workshop. fasdsuccess.com/CKS workshop. Put your name and email, and then we send you an email right away with how to jump into the closed Facebook group. And then we, you know, we build and build and build. And then on the 18th, boom, is the first one. And it's going to be so much fun, and invite all the people. So, okay. But I'm telling you, it's freaking sweet. And we have been refining this year after year after year after year. So fasdsuccess.com/CKS workshop. All right, here we go. We're going to have a great interview today because this girl knows her stuff. But before I get into that, and I know people are like, okay, get on with it. No, I have to do this. And I think it's something that I want to do moving forward. So like I was saying, the CKS workshop, you're going to see a lot of case studies. So I was filming one of these case studies because they're video, and I'm filming one of them, and the woman's from the UK, and she's telling me before we start filming that not only did the coaching program help her sister, and she took the workshop with her, but also her mom. Her mom listens every week and goes for a walk and listens to us. So I said, what's your mom's name? So this is a big, big shout out for Karen in Perth, Australia. Kelly says that you've been doing such an excellent job listening to the podcast. And even though you live away, you're still very helpful. So this is a big, big shout out to you, Karen in Perth. And also, hey, if somebody listens to this show that you want to give a shout out to because they're trying to learn more about FASD and they are really doing some awesome effort with that, let me know. Jeff@FASDForever.com. Let me know who they are, a little bit of the story behind it. And I think I'll do more shout outs because shout outs are awesome. Unless no one writes me, and then subsequently I won't do any more shout outs. But I thought it was cool. Maybe there's more of you guys out there. Okay, folks, listen, today we're talking to Angela Geddes. And she knows her stuff. Angela has over 25 years of experience supporting individuals in a variety of settings. You're going to hear she kept getting so many jobs so she'd get so much experience. She's currently in a private practice providing education, advocacy, and direct support for individuals and families experiencing complex issues, including fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. Angela is also active member of the FASD 1 Diagnostic Action Group, FASD ELMO, and Ontario FASD Action Network, and involves herself in many different projects, including recently writing a book aimed at building a more inclusive service delivery system. Get your pens and papers out because she's going to give lots of nuggets. We'll talk about it a little bit after the interview. I'm ready. Are you ready? All right, let's go. Hey, everybody. Here I am with Angela Geddes. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Buddy, thanks so much for joining me. Like, I know I read your bio before we got talking. You are so busy. I've seen you at pre-pandemic, all of the conferences, and you're doing so many big things. And now you have a book out. So just the fact that you took the time for me today, myself and my audience, we really appreciate you being here.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, excellent. Let's get into her, dude, because you know a lot. And so my goal is to extract as much juice from you as possible so the people listening on the other end could harness the power that you've wielded after 25 years doing social work and just being in the system. I always like to ask the origin story. That's my thing, right? How did you get into the fetal alcohol arena? Like, when did your work in FASD intersect? What was that story?
Well, it's really kind of fascinating, Jeff, because it was really day one. My very first clinical experience as a child and youth worker, working doing a placement at the Child and Family Counseling Center in Parry Sound, Ontario. So I went to school in Sudbury initially, and I met a little fella who had at the time, he was diagnosed with fetal alcohol syndrome. So, you know, the good news for this little fella was that, well, I guess the bad news, we'll start with that. The bad news was obviously he was exposed to a significant amount of alcohol prenatally. But the good news for this little guy too was that he was exposed to a significant amount. And that I say that because he was pretty obviously affected. Yep. So he had services that were wrapped around him from the beginning. So although he was 8 years old, he was medically fragile. He was really quite petite. He had all the physical features and, you know, quite developmentally delayed. So we got to hang out in the kindergarten classroom in spite of the fact that he was 8 years old. But lucky little, strong, tenacious little fella, you know, wasn't really expected to live, let alone walk and do as well as he did. So in that respect, I learned very, very early, you know, the detrimental effects of alcohol exposure. However, like most of us, we kind of thought it needed to be a lot, you know, before right. that kind of damage takes place. So
mm-hmm. And I apologize for interrupting.
No, please. Mm-hmm.
Because I'll lose my train of thought. That's yeah. the way I roll. Now, had you any going through school? Because look at your resume. There's a lot of it. Were you taught about mm-hmm. FASD?
No.
Right. Okay. So that's congruent. Mm-hmm. It's always mm-hmm. the same answer or I get, oh, there was a page, you know, what I get mm-hmm. from people say it was a page from like a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And that was in medical school, like a page, right? Can you believe that?
Yeah.
If that. So anyway, so of course there was none, but then did you know this young man, a little gaffer, was on the spectrum? And then did you research what you could find or mm-hmm. how did that work?
Yeah, he did. Again, this was a 4 month placement. So there's, you know, there's limited amount of learning that can take place. But I was always, you know, really intrigued and inspired to learn more. But I have to be honest with you that, you know, if you fast forward the first 10 years of my career, there still was very little to be known about fetal alcohol syndrome, right. fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And I want to clarify the terminology. FAS was, you know, was what we used to refer. Uh-huh. And again, that was the most common because we as a system expected that people look different. Right? Or they appeared to be.
Yes. And still, that's a fallacy today that Absolutely. There has to be facial features. And it just, mm-hmm. even today, like it drives me nuts how folks don't get access to a diagnosis all over the world because what do we hear? Well, there's no facial features.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, so that was it. Like I said, it was a good experience for me, but it also sort of misdirected me in a sense because then the next 10 years of my career, when I was working in education and working in justice and working in receiving and assessment homes, for example, you know, we just assumed that it was trauma-based, it was relationships, it was, you know, disrupted homes and mental health, right? And sometimes poor parenting. And that's where I really do my best to try to fight that stigma.
The jaded mm-hmm. social workers. I mean, let me take that back. It appears mm-hmm. jaded, but it's almost mm-hmm. like they don't know what to do. Like that's the default, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. they don't know how to help. And so, you know, I don't like to point fingers because at the end of the day, it's all miscommunication. It's all miseducation and misunderstanding because social workers want to help.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And that's where I see, you know, tremendous opportunity because when I do my training and when I do speak to people the way I am right now, you know, and give the lived examples, and I guess I'll back up a little bit too, because part of my research, so I started out as a child and youth worker, and then I very soon and quickly recognized that, you know, children are affected by so many other things, not the least of which the family unit and the communities in which they come. So I went back to school, you know, and I did my undergrad in psychology and with a community-based and education focus. And then I went back again to do my MSW because it's bigger than that. It's bigger than the home. It is community and the social determinants of health. So yeah, I just think that it's really important to really expand upon on that knowledge. But then for me, when I do the training, you can kind of almost see the charts going through people's heads. You know, when I start to use the lived examples and discuss yes. things that I've seen yes. across the sectors.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And mm-hmm. I had a teacher say it was like the students were like falling embers almost.
Yes,
no, absolutely. So sad and poetic at the same time.
Yeah.
And he had this such visceral reaction, grief. Because once he went, oh my goodness, right? Like this is all these kids for all these years. And I think, you know, grief and loss is an area that isn't touched in terms of even with social workers, because mm-hmm. that should be a part of the transitioning, the paradigm shift, because I hear it from even like people like Dr. Mansfield Mello, who went 14 years as a psychiatrist, not knowing. And he thought, oh my gosh, all these times when it should have been. So you went 25 years. Currently still are, but in the social work network, mm-hmm. 25 years ago, I can imagine next to nothing being known about FASD. When did you really, so you said you went another 10 years, but when did this, mm-hmm. I don't want to call it an awakening, I'm not trying to be like that, but when did that hit you like, oh my gosh?
Well, it was kind of like that, actually, Jeff. So I worked in a community health center here in West Elgin, which is west of London. And we had an early years program that was targeting, I guess I'll use the term at risk or, you know, high risk families, right? We were there. We were not part of the generic early years programming so much. We were targeted to address some of the social determinants of health again. And from there, I met a few, you know, really pretty key stakeholders. Tracy Grant would be one of them, who started FASD Elgin London. In Middlesex, Oxford,
and which yeah. still runs today, right?
It still runs. Yeah. So she's the founding member, and I was one of the first. Yeah,
shout out to absolutely. Tracy. Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's amazing. So I think I got bit by the bug, I suppose, back then. And for, you know, coincidentally, September 9th is around the corner. We ran a group for families, and we had concurrent programming always at the health center, which was pretty spectacular. And a really committed group of women who just came because they really loved it. So I'm quite proud of that. But on September the 9th, we used to, as a group, provide the community education. So we would do the research, I'd get the books out, the journal articles, the pictures, the whatever, and we'd create this collage and community education that would be posted and put in the newspaper. And from there, you know, I realized that we all know that teaching helps us to learn. And, you know, I had a number of families that I drank during my pregnancy, Ange. I didn't know I was pregnant until I was 5.5 months. You know, I had 3 or 4, you know, kind of self-assess and say, we need to go further with this. And well, actually 3 or 4 at a time, you know, in one specific time. And so I just saw that throughout. And then when I decided to go back, I ended up getting a job in London while I had applied to do my MSW. And that job was coordinating a diagnostic clinic, an assessment clinic for FASD. And so when you get into that situation and you see the need that far outweighs our capacity to assess, then, you know, you become a little bit more and more passionate. So my thesis and my research really surrounded around community supports. What's the best practice? What do we need to do differently? And how can we build a more inclusive service delivery system based on what we already have? So instead of creating, you know, separate programs and services and being, I don't know, I just don't want it to be exclusionary again. What I'm aiming for is to be inclusive, right? We have a lot of really great supports out there that, with sometimes subtle and sometimes more significant shifts, we can help people immediately with or without the diagnosis.
And so, we can't, and well said, and we can't do that unless people are FASD informed, correct? Because then we're
absolutely
going all over the place.
Absolutely. And so, and really, like I've read a lot of books. I went to school for a lot of years, a ridiculous amount of years, to be honest. But I am really interested in that. But I can honestly tell you that my most meaningful learning has come from families and individuals themselves who are experiencing it. And so that's another reason why I wrote the book, is because those are the stories that make sense to people. You know, we've all read the articles, we know a little bit about FASD, but these stories of how the unique nuances present themselves that can be so confusing and so stigmatizing and so, you know, present such barriers for folks that, yeah.
It's so, good word, confusing, right? I usually say F's with your head, even as a parent. You could know about FASD. Like, that's what makes this so hard, right? And because of, we'll use Dr. Valerie Temple's term, the scattered profile. I don't know where you got it from, but in your book, as someone had mentioned to you, it's like a buckshot. And I thought, what a great visual that is.
Yeah, that was Dr. Jacqueline Pye.
Oh my God. Dear Lord. We love Jackie Pye here.
She's great.
Of course she did. Yeah, of course. She's the best. Anywho, because of that scattered profile, and I'm sure we'll talk about, and I talk about on the show all the time, that over 90% of individuals who are exposed to prenatal alcohol exposure don't have this face. Yet, because of the scattered profile and the different brain domains, they're so talented in some areas. They look normal, talk normal, have all the right words. And so, you know, we take people at face value, not brain value. And that's my saying. Yeah. Once we take people at brain value, their face value goes up. So because we take everybody at face, they look normal, talk normal, so they must be able to function normal. And since they're consistently inconsistent, we're like, do you know? Are you taking advantage of me? Do you not know? So if the parents are struggling with this, you can only imagine the frontline workers in the systems that see it not nearly as much and when they present so well. Do you find the same thing?
Oh, absolutely. And that's exactly, as an extension of my research and less formal per se, I made it a point to become employed at a variety of different places in a variety of different sectors. And so I think that's one of the things that, you know, I remember my sister saying, Ange, you got to stay at a job. Your employers aren't going to like that if you keep leaving after a year or a year and a half. But I took contracts specifically. I was very upfront about it. But I wanted to know, what does FASD look like from a community, like adult chronic mental health situation? What does it look like within hospital, within our emergency, on medicine? You know, where we don't always even, well, we often don't think about these complicated scenarios. So again, that's why I did that. And I feel like being able to speak at it from the front line and from the family's perspective is the most helpful, because people do want to help, Jeff. You know, social workers do, nurses do. And when you present some of these things, I mean, I have to be honest, I do find some resistance.
I want to talk about that. We will get into that.
Yeah, I do. But many and most of us want to do the best they can with the resources that they have available and with what they're able to do. So again, that's what the book is full of, is examples and family stories from a variety of different sectors. And my hope too is, you know, not to speak just to the FASD community. I mean, this is a complicated and beautiful brain, right?
Exactly.
And FASD is within all of our circles, and people struggle with extra, you know, complications, whether it just be a speech, you know, speech difficulty or some mental health issues, you know, that are directly linked to alcohol exposure. And we may never get a full assessment, but we can still be helpful.
Agreed. Now, you great segue. Let's talk about this. Your book, it's an ebook at the moment, correct?
Yes, I'm just going to the printer this weekend to get some hard copies. So,
beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So it's a complicated and beautiful brain. What was the, I guess, you know, we just talked about this, but what made you pull the trigger and say, okay, I got to write this?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think that there's so many people who are struggling unknowingly, you know, and life is harder for them than what it maybe should be. And I have truly met some of the most resilient, passionate, caring, hardworking, tenacious individuals ever who fall within the spectrum, but for the longest time didn't know what was wrong with them. And their parents didn't know what they were doing wrong. And I just feel like we as a system can often perpetuate, but often create trauma for people by not recognizing the potential role of prenatal alcohol exposure and other substances, right? We're learning more about marijuana. We know that drug exposure is not healthy either, you know, but all of these things are not often considered. And so I wrote the book, and I'm always very, very conscious of my writing style and my language, because I want people who are struggling with maybe, you know, 5 or 6 diagnoses or confusing profiles to be able to read this and not feel shame, not feel like, oh, she's talking to me necessarily, but this does apply, you know, this makes sense to me, and this maybe could be me. So I wanted the book to be written because I do think that many people have complicated but yet very beautiful brains, and we need to be strength-based and go with that.
Now, I want to dive into this a little bit. Is that cool? Because I did read it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understood it. So if I understand it, yeah, you're right. Everybody should be able to understand it. Because, you know, as I say, Angela, I am not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I'm good for a spoon, you know? So because of that, I just wanted to talk about a few things. Well, not talking about the whole book, which I could, by the way. Some things jumped out. So it's called Complicated and Beautiful Brain, A Guide to Understanding the Effects of Prenatal Alcohol Exposure, What Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Looks Like Across the Lifespan. Which is a great point. It should be the number one point. I got the chance to speak in New Zealand once, and a nurse said from womb to tomb. It's almost point number one is that it's not a phase. It's not something that they're going to grow out of, right? No. They're born with it, and they will leave the earth with it. But we as a society can help them have an amazing life. Right. So
yeah,
because as I say, anybody could be successful with the right amount of supports. You know, just look to our politicians on both sides of the border, right? Isn't that very apparent? Now,
we all need helpers. That's for sure. That's, we all need helpers.
Do.
And that's part of my book too. Yes, in my practice.
And I learned that that's actually helped me do, you know, be in business for myself and do the things that I've been able to do was from one of my mentors, Donna DeBolt, just hammering interdependence and saying that's not for just individuals on the spectrum. And I took that to heart. And so you're right on, right almost in the opening, you wrote, once you decide to read this material and hear from family experience, there's no going back. What does that mean? Like, is it a hope or is it a claim? Is it a promise that once they read this, it's like the Matrix and they're taking the blue or the red pill?
Well, I suppose I kind of stay away from absolute statements, but it's certainly my hope and it's my experience that once people hear what I have to say, then their practice changes, their community response changes, their interactions with family members become more curious, and we're less harsh, I think, and less judgmental around what could be happening. So I do feel that people will not be the same after they read it. And it's interesting because it is written sort of in a narrative way, kind of in a casual, kind of casual way with referencing all of the research. It's completely evidence-based and up-to-date. But I feel, and this is one of the advantages, and you will know this too, but being on your own and being able to write your own stuff, you can write it the way you know families appreciate it. Not necessarily, it's not a textbook, right? But it is a resource potentially for people. And it's like, I've had families already reach out to me, read it, and then be able to share it with family members who they think that are probably affected by prenatal alcohol exposure has certainly been a part of their history. When a woman sits on the other side of the computer to me and weeps and says to me, I finally feel validated.
Yeah.
I feel like I've not been making this up. I have been trying hard enough and I'm not crazy. So I get goosebumps, right? And those kinds of things bring me to tears and make me realize that this is meaningful stuff, right? So I'm not going to stop. And my hope is that other people don't stop. And so, and it is a resource. And I've been contacted by, community colleges, and I'm going to do some presentations with the master's level social work students. And if they can have this resource and be able to use the QR codes and the fancy little links and everything to get more deeper into it and more academically focused, I think we'll be in a good way.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because for those that are listening that haven't seen the book, what Angela has done is the sources are great, and she's done them in a great way where she's created a QR code. You can either just click and download them, which is super simple, because I did click and download a few of them, I will tell you that. And or you could just put the QR code and it could go right to your phone for those that are a little bit more technically advanced. But if you're not, don't worry about it. I'm not either. So you just click and download it. And so you write it in a very narrative open style, and then you say, boom, this is where I got the information. There you go. So, which is excellent. I appreciate that, instead of having to go way back into the book and the appendix and look up and see, where did you get that? Or that little writing that they do at the bottom of the page with the stars. And I'm like, I can't even see this. So you're right. You've organized it very well, because I have the attention span of a fruit fly. So the fact that the flow was very well done. You also said something, if I could move on to this, you said, we need to be better positioned to assess the symptoms and difficulties that the individual is presenting. What did you mean by be better positioned? Because it was a great point, but to go deeper.
Yeah. Well, I think I believe all of us in the helping profession, and as I said to you, everybody has FASD in their circle. So, when we're in the helping profession, absolutely we do. And I think that by reading this and by digging a little deeper and by taking a little bit more training and being inspired to do so, then there will be no wrong door. So whether you're going to a business downtown, but certainly when you're going to the doctor's office downtown, or you're going in to get any kind of support services, right? Ontario Works, for example, or just any kind of mental health services, parenting education. If people at the front door are better equipped to understand, this is a little bit puzzling. This is a little bit, this looks like it could be something a little bit more than mental health. And not that mental health disorders aren't significant enough on their own, because they are. I'm not minimizing that at all. But sometimes, when people don't show up for their next appointment, it's not because they're not interested or they're not ready or they don't care. It's because they literally forgot, or their best sleep time is between 7 and 12. So they miss 9 o'clock appointments no matter what, right? So when we ask questions, or when we send out reminders, and that's sort of a style that I've had for a long, long time. I can remember going back 10 years ago when I worked at the health center, a mom said, where else do you go where the clinician in the program just calls you to see how you're doing? So when they missed a group or they missed a couple, I would call and say, how are things going? Mm-hmm. Whereas the system, or at least what I've been taught throughout the years, often is if you don't push them, if they want to come, they'll come. But I think people with complicated presentations do want to come, and they are committed to living their best life. They're just not always able to grab it when they need it. And they do need helpers.
Mm-hmm. Executive function deficits.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Absolutely. So
that was one of the biggest aha moments for me, you know, knowing individuals on the spectrum know a lot. It's not what they know. It's what they do with what they know. It's how to access what they know when they need to access it. The difference between your IQ and your executive functioning was a major aha, because not only did I see it in my foster guy, but also, you know, in my own family as well. You talk about this circle, you know, one of my sisters for sure, no doubt. And she's suffering all the tertiary characteristics now because of that, but which is one of the reasons I do what I do, just like what you do for sure. So that was really well said in terms of like taking a deeper look. You know, they wanted to, you know, they're a nice person. I talked to them and they wanted to, and they told me that they wanted to, and they weren't able to. Maybe something else is going on. And that's kind of like when I do training, I like to start with everybody on the same page. And that start is like, could we all agree that, you know, when you ask a kid what they wanted to do when they grow up, or you, or somebody asks you, have you ever met a kid that said, when I want to grow up, I want to be an asshole? You don't find kids that, you know, they don't say, I want to make my life a living hell for my parents. I want to do poorly in school. I don't want friends. I don't want to be invited. You know, I want to be expelled, suspended. You don't meet anybody like that. Yeah. So if we are on the baseline and in agreement that everybody wants to contribute and do well and be loved, then there's a reason something's going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well said. And so I just think, if we dig a little deeper, if we open the door a little wider, if we build a more inclusive service delivery system that allows for some of those more unique nuances, and we can help them up a little bit more, and that focus on interdependence rather than independence and complete autonomy, although being very mindful, you know, that people with FASD have tremendous gifts and they do deserve to have a voice at the table and some autonomy for sure, you know, and I'm currently seeing a situation right now where, you know, FASD is the complete focus and everything that's going wrong within the family is that. And I'm like, that's so not helpful either, right? Sometimes we need to take a break from that and just be, and be able to focus on some of those things and provide an environment that supports those strengths and let go of some of those other things.
So now I know some people are walking, some people are running, some people are listening in the car. We have people that listen in the shower. Shout out if you're listening in the shower. Here, and they're thinking, oh guys, this shit's all kumbaya, and we get that, but this is not how what I'm experiencing when I'm in the community. And you mentioned it early, like you even have some people that it's not that easy. We don't just come out and say inclusivity. People don't just there's some harsh realities, that there's some setbacks and tough nuts to crack, if I could say. You mentioned in your book that you consulted in a hospital setting where you were in front of people that ran hospitals. Am I right in that?
Well, I went to the ethics committee to try to discuss some things. Yes.
So in your book, you write, despite my knowledge and my success in offering support in a different way, because earlier in the book, I don't want to give the story up, but you mentioned some stories of how you really helped and what you did. So you even said, this is what I did. This is how it helped. Okay. And so despite my knowledge and my success in offering support in a different way, advocacy efforts, which included consultation with hospital ethics, provided not to be enough. The risks were seen to be just too high. Bring me in that room. What does that mean that they were saying that the risks of what?
Well, in some particular cases, medical procedures are granted to people who are most likely to live and to be healthy and successful. And sometimes procedures are denied to people. So for example, if you are needing a new liver, then you need to meet criteria. And that is no alcohol for a year, you know, and you have to go on a list and that kind of thing, right?
In Canada, sorry, just to give some basis, we have a different health system for, because people listen to this all in the Commonwealth. Sure, like I know in the US you can pay for it, or you have insurance and they'll pay for it regardless, but we have something called OHIP, and they will decide on whether or not, this is what Angela's talking about, whether the chances to live or not. So they make the choice in whether to do that. Okay. So
yeah. And I don't mean to make it sound harsh.
I just, the medical is different in different countries. So they might be like, you could just pay for that.
Absolutely.
No, it doesn't work like that here.
So, you know, we know that people who've been exposed to alcohol prenatally are at higher risk for drug use, for example. And in some situations, people who use intravenous drug use, there's medical complications that result. And sometimes it requires, you know, pretty serious surgeries.
Yeah.
But if you're at risk of going back to that lifestyle, or if you're a continual user, then sometimes you kind of run out of chances in our healthcare system. And so in these cases, I guess there were a few of them where, oh, it was just so remarkable to see such a young person with so many skills be, but you know, in fairness, you know that if he just got released tomorrow, he would be back with the same, you know, in his same home, in the same community. But I was trying to prove a point that if we provided different kinds of supports and really protected him, because, and in some cases, there was one person who ended up going to palliative care and, you know, got out music and was helping deliver the food, was creating, you know, providing entertainment to all the people that were there and got well enough that ended up leaving. Do you know what I mean? So there was an example of where he, you know, this person was so sick and she, you know, really, really struggled and, but then ended up doing remarkably well in a safe, contained. And ironically, and I mean, more research needs to be done on this, but very little, if any, withdrawal symptoms. Like in the safe environment, different presentation altogether, which is
agreed. I could only speculate. Is it because of the way their nervous system is put together, right? Because we know our guys see the world differently, feel the world and hear the world, right? Just because of the mix. Yeah, there's so many areas of study. But so you sit there flabbergasted in front of an ethics committee. Did they know fetal alcohol and still come to that decision? Or were you like, okay, there's still a gap in understanding, because if they did understand, maybe they would have put this, because it sounds, again, they come up against the executive functioning issue, like get sober, get healthy, then we'll do this. But all the steps to do that sometimes are beyond their capacity to do as an individual.
Well, and I think that there are, I think you alluded to it earlier in this session that, so like, what do we do now, right? Like even with it. So first of all, there was no diagnosis with this situation. This was me being able to do these situations, a fairly comprehensive screen, talk to the biological mother, get confirmation, you know, do all these things. But then what, you know, adult diagnostic services are very few and far between. They're hard to get, even when there's psychology in the hospitals. And, you know, it's just, it's not an easy path. So there was no proof. There was just a pretty passionate social worker, you know, sharing what I thought I knew. And I'm pretty sure I was right. So there was that. But then also it's that, well, there is no family that's going to take him in to protect him. He can't stay in palliative care forever. He certainly can't stay in the hospital forever. So what do we do to protect him or to provide the environment that he needs in order to be as healthy as he can be? Those were the things that were contributing to the decision at that point in time that had to be relatively quickly made. So
yeah, that's
it's complicated.
There was one point that I was the program coordinator for a private agency just outside of Toronto, Brampton, actually. And I was in the hospital with one of our guys in the psychiatric part. First things first, they're like, oh, he has to take off all his clothes. And there was no way, like, you could just tell. Anyway, long story short story, the head of psychiatry just happened to be there. And I got to talk to him just for a few, happened, great word. See, there we go. Here's the difference. And talking to him, I said, do psychiatrists not know about FASD? And so therefore, you know, there's not care or there's not attention to the issue. He said, that's not really the problem. It's the liability. Why most psychiatrists won't engage. And he was just very honest with me like that. And so that kind of, you know, I walked out with a blank stare, like, this is the top guy saying this is why. And it almost goes to what you were saying about the risks.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember, you know, Mark Cordipat, right? From the Hamilton FASD group. And he was talking to my group one time. They talked to doctors and they just didn't want to be sued or didn't want to be, you know, hit with a malpractice accusation, even if it was unfounded. So it is tough, I guess, is what I'm just backing you.
I think it is. It absolutely is. And I mean, even for pediatricians and, you know, there's some pediatricians that they do want to be helpful, but they also don't want to then be known as the FASD clinic. They don't want it to take over their practice. They're aware of burnout. They're aware of time too. I mean, you know, our families take more time than usual. So even from my perspective in social work as a private practitioner, I mean, the 1 hour involves a lot more than 1 hour, right? And there's a lot of, you know, we talk about interdependence, but our system really focuses on that confidentiality and conflict of interest. So if you're supporting the parents, how do you support the kid? You shouldn't be supporting two people from the same family. Well, that doesn't even work in my field, right? I have to support the family because one can't do it without the other. So as much as we can, I always say we're working as a team. But if the child gets upset with me and wants nothing to do with me or counseling, let's just say this doesn't happen
often. They fire
often,
everyone.
But,
everyone gets fired.
They do sometimes. But the parents are like, I still want some support. So, you know, typically social workers have some guidelines around that I have to bend a little. And you're always worried about that too. Like, is there going to be somebody that says, this isn't okay?
Yeah, I had a teacher tell me rules are meant to be broken.
Yeah,
she was very poignant about that. Well, while our parents might not be able to get in front of ethic committees, they do interact with professionals and clinicians. And one of the things in your book, you put out some quotes of what clinicians say. And this is, I hear this often, you know, I don't see a lot of FASD, but we see a lot of ADHD. Mm-hmm. Now, my question to you is, when you get faced with that, what do you say? So I'm trying to... But like, so a parent can hear that. I hear that shit all the time. Like, what would be a rebuttal to that a parent could say?
Well, ADHD is a much more commonly understood condition, and it is often a part of the presentation of people who've been exposed to alcohol. So can we dig a little deeper? can I give you some more examples of some of the other, you know, things that are going on, right, that are complicated?
Beautiful. And, you know, Dr. Popova, what did she find out? A half of individuals on the spectrum also have, you know, ADHD as well. So it's ADHD and, you know, and oftentimes the interventions won't work because there's other things, you know, going on, won't be as effective. So thanks for that. Thanks. And by the way, folks, like I just asked her, Angela does not see any of these questions, and I'm not trying to put you in a corner, but it's often our answers when we're not prepared are the best answers, because what if you just have to come up with that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I got 20 of those. No, just joking.
Oh, dear.
Just joking. Okay. So it's my favorite thing from your book, and you should put these on the, you know, they on Facebook, they have the things and the things. All of the, you know, in your book, you said have this should be, you give the evidence and you say this should be concerning because, and then you give the reasons why, right? And so one of the reasons frontline folks should be concerned is that people affected, I'll put in brackets, with FASD are not waiting patiently in their rooms for family, friends, and service providers to understand them. They are already presenting in the community, at the beaches, in the workplace, in the principal's office, in children's treatment center, in residential settings, in parenting programs, in child welfare, in adult mental health and addictions, in justice and housing programs, in poverty reduction programs, health centers, etc. What is the message like? We can't wait for them to come to us. Go deeper on that one.
So the message is, first of all, I do apologize for the long-winded sentence, but I did that kind of on purpose.
No, it's awesome. Yeah, no, I get it. Like, cause you're trying, it's more conversational, right? Like that hit me, right? People, they're not sitting there waiting, saying I have FASD. Anyway, you go deeper.
Yeah. Well, so, and again, I guess it goes back to just being better positioned to identify that, hey, this is a little bit awkward. This is a little bit puzzling. This is curious to me. This is not, as you made reference, nobody tries to be that disruptive. You know, I mean, I've been on tropical vacations and somebody's, you know, kind of, you know, acting in a way that's not in line with their character or their values, for example, you know, in a public place, just overstimulated and having a hard time regulating. People don't do that on purpose. But also, people, you know, mental health treatments generally work if you're working with people who have just mental health issues, right? But if it's more complicated than that and things aren't working, then we as a system can do better if we know that and if we're better able to identify. And I'm not saying we all have to be experts, but if at the front door or in our office, we're able to say, I'm curious about that. I think I need to talk to somebody else, or I need a referral, or I need to consult, or I need to learn more, then that individual will do better. Because again, they're not just waiting for us to figure them out. As a teacher, you've got one in your classroom at least, you know. And Dr. Carl Bell did some really intriguing research in Chicago, where, you know, he found that in his clinic, it was around 50% qualified for a complex neurodevelopmental or FASD diagnosis. His facility is mental health. He was a specialist in mental health. So when you're talking about 50% of those who are addressing chronic or acute mental health services, I think we have to do things differently. And any attempt that we make to make, you know, changes to the system without acknowledging that a significant number of the people that come through our doors in human services, our social service departments and medical and healthcare are more complicated than what we think. Well, we're not doing a good job.
Mm, well said. Well said.
Right.
Absolutely. When you're talking about prevalence, when you're talking about even screening, a lot of screening is like trauma based. And something that jumped out of the page again at me was you said trauma is based on perception and not always accuracy. So I was like, ooh, what do you mean by that?
Well, so what I mean is that when you've got somebody who's presenting with, I'll say, an inconsistent memory, there's some confabulation, for example, stories get retold, and we all do it. Right? We all retell a story, and it's slightly different every time and a little bit more in our favor, you know, most of the time.
Yeah. So every story I told about sports is definitely confabulated.
So it gets better and better. So, but the point is, if somebody comes home and their teacher, they're involved with a, you know, in a conflict at school, and their teacher looked at them sternly and maybe changed the tone of their voice, the way I perceive that and the way you will perceive that and the way somebody with FASD will perceive that could be very different. And there have been false allegations, right, brought back where people, and they believe that the teacher hit them or the kid at school hit them or the mom hit them. When these are believed, then they're experiencing the trauma. They believe their mother hit them. So how do we delicately, you know, investigate, but yet understand that sometimes the perception is not accurate? So I've had experiences. And again, the most important learning I've ever had is from family members. And one mom, she was a young mom, and she said to me, you know, you're the first person to call me and ask about this family was disrupted because of allegations. But she said, you know, I called the children's aid and asked for help because this kid was doing some really weird things. And I know that I wasn't the best parent in the world, and maybe I raised my voice a little more often than I should have, but I never hit them or hurt them or did any of those things that they said I did. I had to let go because I wasn't the parent that those kids needed. And to me, that's trauma. And that's trauma for that mom and trauma for those kids who believe that they were abandoned, they were neglected, they were physically hurt.
Triple whammy, man. Right? Prenatal trauma, postnatal trauma, like attachments.
Absolutely.
It just stacks on top of each other.
And interestingly enough, and this happens a lot, is that, you know, this intergenerational PAE, intergenerational possible FASD, where, you know, the irony is that, you know, sometimes family members are also perpetuating this and not supporting the mom, not supporting the dads in these situations, but yet they actually consumed alcohol during their pregnancy. So these challenges that are so perplexing, it's hard on them too, right? They're like, what is going on? You know, why did this kid run away from me? Why is this kid having babies at 16? Why is this kid dropping out of school? Meanwhile, they're the ones that, you know, and again, not because they meant to, not because they wanted to, nobody, and I made that very clear in the book too, people drink for a lot of reasons, none of which is to harm their babies.
No, we're on the same page there, sister. Yeah. I've never met a mom ever that would ever hurt their baby on purpose, ever.
No, but this lack of awareness, again, this intergenerational FASD, but intergenerational trauma throughout the lifetime too.
And then put epigenetics on that when genes can't express themselves right. Anyways, that's maybe FASD 102. So this is the last thing. And then I want you to tell people where they can get the book and what you're doing and all that good stuff. So one of the points you made is, and I'm going to ask for a couple tips. So just get the prefrontal cortex ready. We need to create an environment for growth. So just picture, Angela, people don't, because all over the world, listen, they don't get to sit in front of you. They don't have people like you. And so they might be hearing this for the first time. And we know everybody is different. Do you have a few quick tips what a parent can do to create an environment for growth at home? Something general that they could apply that, you know, well, we know it needs to be individualized, but some generalities that they could start thinking about.
Mm-hmm. I think reducing stimuli is a big one. Awesome. I think having planned, you know, kind of divide and conquer planned opportunities. And I often say, you know, make sure that each activity ends before it goes south. So if it means it's only 15 minutes, it's only 15 minutes, right? And I think that for families and parents, the biggest thing is to, well, there's two biggest things, I guess. The one is the biological age and the actual developmental age. And that discrepancy, I think, is a huge piece that serves families well almost immediately, but we have to be reminded of it. And reevaluating our expectations and the stories that we have in our head around what a family needs to look like. Mm-hmm. You know, so why do we all have to sit around the Christmas tree and open presents? I mean, that's culturally specific, but
why do we all have to sit at the supper table? You know, when your kid has sensory issues and can't even sit for a minute and everybody's clinking and clanking and they can't even sit. Why do they have to do that? Sorry, you're right. Yes, ma'am.
So whose stories are we listening to and are they still relevant? I think that's a really big piece that families can benefit from.
Mm-hmm. That was that. That's all. I know you have 1,000 more because they're here in your book, which again, by the way, folks, literally that was only 5 things and I could have wrote down 100 things, but this is an interview, not a book club, which you should have, by the way. It's called A Complicated and Beautiful Brain. Angela, where could people get the book?
Well, right now it's just available on my website. I'm not really sure, you know, I wrote the book again. I think I mentioned I wrote it because I really have a lot of important stories to tell from families and from my experiences on the front line. I really want to make it so that people, you know, do better as a result of it. So I just have it on my website. So it's an ebook and I've got a price for service providers, which is a little bit more. And for individuals who are curious, who may be wondering about their own situation or their family's member situation, it's just $10 for the ebook. So,
and you can get that at Angela.
What's Angela Geddes. AngelaGeddes.ca. I made it kind of simple. So,
yeah, well, that's excellent. Your name. I tried to get my name at some photographer dude. I was like, you got it.
I was lucky. Yeah.
And so, this is the segment we call shameless self promotion, whether you want to do it or not. I want to do it on your behalf. Okay. So, not only do you have the book, but you have one for service providers too, correct?
Well, they're the same book, just different prices.
Got it. Okay.
So, yeah. So if you're a service provider.
Agencies can pay for that. You know, and it doesn't matter. $10 or I think it's listed at $25. If you're in the United States, that's only like $5 with exchange rate. So come on. Not a big deal. People can't see, but you have a badass office. And you were telling me that you're having an office. Like, what other services do you offer? So folks, you know, might think, oh, I'm not only going to get the book, but I need more Angela in my life. Tell me what you're doing.
Well, I guess I'm doing a lot of things to try to help build capacity and to help, you know, make sure that families are better supported. So one of the things that I've always learned to be very, very helpful and appreciated for families is concurrent programming. So one of the barriers, particularly with our families, is to have care for their kids while they look after themselves. So if they do want to come for parenting education and support, there are times where I'm able to offer a child and youth counselor with FASD, with an FASD lens, to be able to provide concurrent programming. So, you know, while I'm in offering support, whether it's clinical social work, parent education, or sometimes itself, it's related to their own mental wellness, right? How they are doing and they want some counseling for themselves. And then the young people can be in the other room. So just opening that up now, I think, you know, COVID has provided us with a lot of really cool opportunities to support. I do support people all over the province.
Yeah. How do they do that? So are you able to, are you just limited to the province? Because again, the Commonwealth listens to this. Like, what are the regulations about that?
So, you know, I provide counseling and the regulations for my social work practice, but training and education and parent support can be broader than that.
So my friend Betty from Iowa that wants to get in front of you to learn a bit more, they could still reach out to you?
Yeah, you know, they can. And there's
New Zealand can jump in. I'm telling you, that's who listens.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And again, it's not clinical, it's not therapy, it would be parent education and support and that kind of thing. That's where my college limits me to the province of Ontario right now.
All on your website.
It is. Yeah. You can send me a message on the website to connect. There's a lot of little buttons on there to connect with me and give me what's going on. And I'll.
Yeah. Great. Great on the eyes. Easy to navigate. People have no problem because again, I did it, you know, and sometimes I just struggle with those simple things. The book again is called A Complicated and Beautiful Brain. That's the title of the book, but reading it certainly isn't complicated. Angela, I enjoyed this, man. Thank you so much for coming on. Would you do this again?
Absolutely. Yes, I will continue to do whatever we can to help families feel a little bit better understood and a little bit lighter in their journey.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you're not changing the world and writing all this stuff and being awesome, what do you do? Like, what do you do for fun? Mm. You got a hobby or?
Oh my goodness. Yes, I do. I was saying my parents, my families are from, I was born in the North. So I still have access to cottage country, which is lovely on both sides of my family. So I've got family in the Parry Sound area as well and North Bay. And so I love to do that. I love to water ski. I love to play baseball. I'm learning golf is a little easier on my body. And my new husband really loves golf and my parents love golf. So it's a really cool way to spend time together. So I'm trying hard.
I can make it about 7 holes before I'm completely bored. But then I end up being the helper. So I drive the cart, I'll get the things, I'll retrieve the things. You know, I find myself to be useful. I get it why people do it. And the location, folks, she's talking about, we live in the province of Ontario in Canada, a little bit to the north, and it's absolutely God's country. We're actually from the same hometown as Sudbury, Ontario. Honestly, last question. Are you watching anything awesome on Netflix that the audience should be aware of?
Oh, you know what? I'm terrible. I don't really watch TV. I really don't.
Me neither. No problem.
Yeah, no, I don't have. I like This Is Us. I do watch that in the winter. I really enjoy that one. That has all the feels.
Yeah. It's amazing as a social worker, you still go for the stuff with all the feels. That's like other social workers I talk to love that murder mystery stuff. You know, you're dealing with this all day and then you go home and you watch it all night. It's a unique breed. Honestly, thanks again for joining me. Guys, go pick up her book. If you want a little bit more one-on-one time with her, all the information is there, how you can reach her. Best of luck, man, and keep kicking ass.
All right. Thank you so much, Jeff. Take good care.
What was funny about that?
Okay, are we done now? Are you stopping?
Right? I told you, Angela knows exactly what she's talking about. However cool, like going to so many different jobs just so she can get experience to become a better advocate. I also had a lot of jobs, but I was either fired or I quit. Not quite the same, but I digress. So again, guys, go to AngelaGeddes.com, grab a copy of her book, her ebook, A Complicated and Beautiful Brain. I got a lot out of it. And I got a lot out of the interview itself, for example. And she even says that, listen, people do want to help. Social workers, nurses, doctors, people in your life do want to help. The problem is with FASD being FASD informed, FASD education, because our kids look normal and talk normal. And that's why, again, we put together this free workshop that happens on the 18th to help you with that, right? She says the parents come to her and they don't know what they're doing wrong. And I see that too. You are trying so hard, but you're using methods and techniques that you used on neurotypical individuals, and it's just not working out. We need to parent individuals on the spectrum differently because, you know, what you mentioned, we could create trauma by not being FASD informed, and we can actually, you know, make things worse. And I mean, we, the royal we as society, and we have been doing that. I like what she says. We all need helpers. And I will say that story 100 times. How when I learned about interdependence and I needed a helper, I have a lot of helpers right now. I have Kevin, who's doing this. I have Yvonne Williams, who is my external support specialist. We have moderators for a free group. I have coaches that help me with my coaching program. I have Tara. So I have a big support system. And so we all need helpers. You might need a helper too, or a few. And so again, I'm going to keep rehashing this. I'm going to be talking a lot about, and I'm not really sorry. You know, we do this Caregiver Kickstart workshop just once a year. And do you need a helper? Do you need to help somebody become FASD informed? So then don't forget like to register FASDsuccess.com/CKS workshop. and then you're good to go. You just put your name and your email in. So I'm going to talk a lot about it, just a heads up, and I'm not sorry, because I see what happens when people go through this transformation of what it was like before, of walking on eggshells and not knowing what to do next, by flying by the seat of their pants, by when they're trying to advocate, people don't take them seriously, and they feel small and belittled, and it hurts, and it's lonely. So I know that what we do helps people with that. It could help you with that. So I don't do things often, but I'm going to sing this loud and proud. And if you like me and you like the show, I absolutely guarantee you, you're going to love this workshop. It's so much fun. And what else she talks about, this was my biggest takeaway from this, is that we can't wait for them to come to us to help them. That was a big aha moment. We can't wait for individuals on the spectrum to come for us to help them. And she was talking about broader in terms of social work and service delivery, because they're already presenting their symptoms at school and at home and in the community and everywhere. I thought that was a really big aha moment for me. And again, nobody's trying to be disruptive. And the last thing that she talked about was reevaluate what a traditional family looks like. Whose stories are you listening to? And another one that I told my closed coaching group a couple weeks ago is that, you know, when it comes to getting advice or unsolicited advice, ask yourself, would I go to this person for advice? And if the answer is no, then why are you listening to their criticisms? If you are not going to go to these people for advice, then you do not need to listen to their criticisms about parenting an individual on the spectrum, which they have no idea how to do. And I hear stories over and over and over again. What helped me become successful was parenting different. But one of the things that we're missing, because there's a lot of training out there, is really how to advocate, what to say, when to say it, how to really get people on board. And because once people are on board and they get it, then they get it. It's like the Matrix, blue pill, red pill, right? So keep grinding. Things are happening. This is all month. So you can jump into our closed workshop group like right away. So fasdsuccess.com/CKSworkshop. Yeah, Jeff, you're talking about it a lot. Heck yeah, because I want you to come. If you listened all the way to the end last week and you sent me an email, check your email, because I will have sent you the registration link by now. Check all your folders in case you didn't get it, so you make sure that you get your spot. Okay, man, it is a big month. I know we just finished September, FASD Awareness Month. We'll look at October as like, now let's do something about it month. Now let's take steps. Now let's take your situation and start to turn this around. You don't have to live like you've been living. You don't have to be alone. So come do it with us. I love you so much. Again, if you want to email me with any questions, jeff@fasdforever.com. Or if you want to tell me somebody to give a shout out to, I'll do that too. All right. Until then, have a great week. I'll see you next week. Keep up the good work. Love you. Bye.